Okay, good evening. So we'll be starting our activity tonight. As usual, there are going to be three papers presented by three different fellows. The first is Dr. Na'mat Ahmad, who is a fellow in pulmonary and critical care in the Lebanese University. Na'mat.
Good afternoon. It was my pleasure to be the first speaker in our meeting. I will present an original article from the Journal of Bone and Mineral Research, November 2014, about calcium and vitamin D in sarcoidosis. Is supplementation safe? As we all know, sarcoidosis is a multisystemic disease of unknown cause, characterized by the presence of activated T cells, mononuclear phagocytes, and non-caseating granulomas. Usually, most patients do not need treatment. But in cases of organ-threatening sarcoidosis, corticosteroids are used as first-line treatment. In this light, osteoporosis prevention with calcium and vitamin D is often warranted. But the prevalence of hypercalcemia in patients with sarcoidosis is approximately 5 to 11%. This is due to two facts. First, the expression in sarcoid granulomas of high levels of 1-alpha-hydroxylase, which transforms the vitamin D25 into its active form, the 1.5 vitamin D. Second, due to the expression in sarcoid macrophages of PTH-related protein that exerts an autocrine action of alpha-1-hydroxylase, enhancing the production of vitamin D125. So we are in the dilemma. Sarcoidosis patients are at risk for hypercalcemia, and at the same time, calcium and vitamin D supplementation is necessary for osteoporosis prevention, which may affect the calcium metabolism. So to which extent is calcium and vitamin D supplementation safe? In order to respond to this question, this study was done. In this retrospective cohort study, a large group of sarcoidosis patients was examined for the serum levels of calcium and vitamin D, its association with disease activity, and whether calcium and vitamin D supplementation increased or not the risk of hypercalcemia. A total of 301 patients who visited the Erasmus University Medical Center outpatient clinic between July 1986 and June 2009 were included. So we have a 23-year period of time. Sarcoidosis was diagnosed according to the American Thoracic Society, and patients were studied until last visit, loss of follow-up, or death. Serum levels of calcium, vitamin D25, and 1.5D were measured in 293, 183, and 172 patients, respectively. Disease activity of sarcoidosis was measured by two imaging techniques, chest X-ray in 111 patients, and it was graded in 5 stages, as we all know: stage 1, no abnormalities; 1, hyaluroadenopathies; 2, hyaluroadenopathies plus infiltrate; 3, only parenchymal infiltrate; and 4, fibrosis. And second, the somatostatin receptor scintigraphy in 70 patients, which can localize granulomas according to binding to somatostatin receptors in different organs. And it was graded on a 4-point scale: 0, no uptake; 1, less than the liver; 2, equal to the liver; and 3, more than the liver. Patients treated with calcium and vitamin D were retrospectively selected from the included patients. Disease activity, serum level of calcium, vitamin D25 and 125, and possible malignancies were retrieved from the medical record. The doses of calcium and vitamin D varied, but most patients used 500 mg of calcium and 400 international units of vitamin D daily. So we have 301 patients. Calcium was measured in 293. It was high in 23 patients, and from those patients, 4 had a high level of vitamin 125D. It was low in 27 patients, from whom 17 had low level of vitamin D25. Vitamin D125 was measured in 183 patients. It was low in 115 patients, which is 63%, and it was normal in the rest. And vitamin 1.5D was measured in 172 patients. It was high in 8% and low in 3%. Only 225 patients continued the follow-up from the 301. And retrospectively, they were studied for what treatment they received. And we found that 182 patients received steroid over the 23 years, and 70 only didn't receive steroid. From the 182 patients who received steroids, 65 were given calcium and vitamin D supplementation and 117 no. And in the non-steroid group, 39 were given calcium and vitamin D and 31 no. Hypercalcemia occurred in the steroid group. Hypercalcemia occurred in two patients who received CAD and two patients who didn't receive CAD, while in the non-steroid group, hypercalcemia occurred in 3 patients who received CAD and in 14 patients who didn't receive CAD. And all these patients who developed hypercalcemia in the non-steroid, non-CAD group, the vitamin D 25 and 125 was normal. From the 5 patients who developed hypercalcemia in the CAD group, they had a low level of vitamin 125D and normal level of 125D before starting the supplementation. So in the 5 patients who developed hypercalcemia in the CAD group, what was the cause of hypercalcemia? One patient had hyperparathyroidism shown by the high TH level. 3 had exacerbation of sarcoidosis with low vitamin D25 in all patients except 1. And the 5th patient had hypercalcemia at starting the CAD supplementation. So none of these 5 patients who received calcium and vitamin D developed hypercalcemia because of the calcium and vitamin D supplementation. What about the correlation between serum level of calcium and vitamin D? As we see here, there was no correlation between the serum level of calcium and vitamin D25, neither calcium and vitamin D125. While there was a positive correlation between the serum level of vitamin D25 and 125. The pertinent findings was the significant negative correlation between the level of vitamin D25 and the disease activity measured by the somatostatin receptor uptake. As we see here, the lower the level of vitamin D25, the higher the uptake grade on somatostatin receptor scintigraphy, which means a higher disease activity. So the study was planned to study the prevalence of calcium and vitamin D disorders in sarcoidosis patients and its association with disease activity, and to study the safety of calcium and vitamin D supplementation in patients with sarcoidosis. In this cohort, hypercalcemia occurred in 8%, and in the literature it was around between 5 and 11%, so the same result. Remarkable was the number of patients with decreased serum level of vitamin D25. It was 63%, while in the general population it's around 50%. It varies according to the countries and the exposure to sun, but in general it's around 50% in normal population, and it was 63% in sarcoidosis population. As we all know, vitamin D is an important immunomodulator, and recently many studies have shown that in severe inflammatory diseases like IBD and multiple sclerosis, the decreased level of vitamin D25 was a risk factor for higher disease activity. And in our studies, disease activity of sarcoidosis measured by the somatostatin receptor scintigraphy correlated negatively with the serum level of vitamin 25D. So we can say that low serum level of vitamin D25 could be a risk factor for disease activity in sarcoidosis, and supplementation with vitamin D could be beneficial. What about the correlation between calcium and vitamin D and the occurrence of hypercalcemia? In the study, sarcoidosis patients without calcium and vitamin D were at higher risk for hypercalcemia compared to those who were not on calcium and vitamin D supplementation. So as a conclusion, we can say that serum level of vitamin D25 are negatively related with disease activity of sarcoidosis, and calcium and vitamin D supplementation is safe for all sarcoidosis patients and necessary for vitamin D deficient ones. What about the critical appraisal of the study? Is the study valid? First of all, because it is a cohort study, no randomization could be done. So there is unintentionally a difference in patient's characteristics between the two groups. Second, there was no adjustment for important prognostic factors like age and comorbidities, and the two groups were not equally divided based on sex and the use of corticosteroids. Third, because of its retrospective design, there is a classification bias because not all the tests were done for the two groups equally. For example, the serum levels of vitamin D25 were not measured in all patients, neither in all patients who received calcium and vitamin D. What about the results? Are they valid? First, the association between low vitamin D and disease activity seems to be strong because of the scintigraphy uptake, which was low and high in the vitamin D deficient patients. What about the association between calcium and vitamin D supplementation and hypercalcemia? In our study, it was proven to be negative. I mean that there was no increased risk for hypercalcemia in patients treated with calcium and vitamin D compared to non-treated patients. Is this statistically significant? Here, the table shows the exposure, which is the supplementation of calcium and vitamin D, and the outcome, which is the hypercalcemia. From the 104 patients who received calcium and vitamin D, only 5 developed hypercalcemia, while from the 148 patients who were not treated with calcium and vitamin D, 16 patients developed hypercalcemia. So the incidence of hypercalcemia in the experimental group, which is the calcium and vitamin D group, is 5 out of 104, which is 0.05. While the occurrence of the exposure, which is the outcome, which is the hypercalcemia, occurred in 16 patients from 148 in the non-CAD group, which is 0.1. So here we see that the control group had worse outcome in terms of hypercalcemia compared to the experimental group who received CAD, with an absolute risk reduction of 0.05. So as we are studying the safety of giving calcium and vitamin D in terms of hypercalcemia, we are supposed to calculate the number needed to harm, which is the inverse of absolute risk increase. But the number needed to harm can't be calculated here because there was an absolute risk reduction instead of absolute risk increase with CAD group compared to non-CAD group. How this can be explained? Is it the fact that giving calcium and vitamin D will ameliorate the vitamin D level and consequently will have less disease activity and therefore less hypercalcemia? Or is it a hazardous result due to the previously mentioned confounding factors like giving or not corticosteroids and other underlying comorbidities? We cannot say. What about the applicability? This study can be applicable to all sarcoid patients because no specific inclusion or exclusion criteria were used, and it is available and easy to perform. It needs only to measure the serum level and to monitor the disease activity, which can be, which is not difficult to do. So as a conclusion, this study provides a rationale for a new systematic disease on vitamin D in therapy in sarcoidosis patients with active disease and vitamin D deficiency. Thank you. Any questions?
Dr. Awakit?
No, here the study was done to prove that if there is a safety or harm. But in this study, we concluded that there was a, not only a comparison of the effect, there was a better effect in the group who received vitamin D and calcium in terms of hypercalcemia. And maybe it is related to the disease activity. We cannot say this as a conclusion.
Mm-hmm. It's not interesting unless we are talking about activity or side effects. This is it. What is your opinion?
So the dilemma was that the majority of patients will be given steroids, and we know the side effects of steroids in terms of bone loss and hypercalcemia due to this effect. So the study was aimed to show if there a benefit or a harm from giving supplementation with vitamin D and calcium, and it showed that there was no harm. Instead, there was a benefit. Yani, the group who didn't receive calcium and vitamin D had higher rate of hypercalcemia, which was weird. Yani.
Yeah. But to wrap up the answer, the study was powered to look at the potential complicated hypercalcemia of replacement. And the only conclusion you could make that people who require replacement, it is safe to replace them if they have sarcoid. There was a signal that this could have a potential benefit, but that's a signal that you cannot base any conclusion on. So, of course, we do not advocate giving calcium or vitamin D to treat hypercalcemia or to prevent it from happening. But giving it in required dosage for deficient patient is not harmful. That's the conclusion. Yes, Dr. Kanj.
Patient has hypercalcemia, not hypercalcemia, what would you do?
If steroids.
Yeah.
For both, for the hypercalcemia and for the sarcoidosis. And you can hit the two at the same time.
So you give him steroids for hypercalcemia, and then you give him vitamin D and calcium?
No. If he is deficient Nadine, he will get vitamin D and calcium. If he has hypercalcemia, you treat him as a sarcoid with hypercalcemia with steroids. You do not replace him. But people who are deficient and need replacement, you should replace them and not you. Because the trend we see that in a lot of sarcoid patients who are hypocalcemic or hypovitaminosis D, they don't get replaced because we are concerned of a potential hypercalcemia. This paper would say that these people can be replaced safely. That's the only conclusion we can make. No limitation. The question asked was answered. There are signals that we are trying to see in different studies.
Yeah, but the hypercalcemia, the hypercalcemia of these patients was secondary to sarcoid, or was, and this is why they did not give them the calcium and vitamin D, while the hypercalcemia happened after they gave calcium and vitamin D.
Yes, the hypercalcemia was noted in the subset of people who were in the control arm who did not receive supplementation even.
Okay,
but
so
it happened later on. So it's most likely related to the disease itself.
So when they diagnose that boy, they diagnose hypercalcemia?
Not necessarily, no. It was shown later on in the follow-up that they developed hypercalcemia. They were not hypercalcemic in the beginning. None of the recruited patients was hypercalcemic in the beginning. During the course of the intervention, a group developed hypercalcemia, which was more prevalent in the people who did not receive supplementation. Could supplementation have a protective effect? We do not know. It's a signal that we have to look at. But people who are deficient, again, the conclusion only is deficient people, we should replace them without fear of hypercalcemia. That's the only message.
And the prevalence of vitamin D deficiency was 65% in these sarcoidosis patients. Yeah. The high number. The incident, the prevalence of...
All the population is deficient in vitamin D. I mean...
It's around 50% in the general population, but in these patients, it was around 65%. And it correlated negatively with somatostatin uptake, which means a higher disease activity.
Okay.
What about the supplementation?
Yes.
They
received combination.
Yeah,
the intervention was to receive both in all the study, yes.
Only serum levels.
Yeah.